Welcome to Finding the Faith with me, your host, Frida Donnelly, where we explore what matters. Whether it's traversing someone's faith journey, diving deeper into doctrine, or simply enjoying Christian fellowship, I aim to focus on the good and the beautiful to provide you with some respite from the world. If you'd like to join us live, check out Finding the Faith on Rumble every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. All the links are in the show notes down below. Please remember to rate and subscribe, and I'll see you on the other side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Finding the Faith. Tonight, I am so excited to have with us so many gorgeous faces. Would everybody like to go around real quick and introduce themselves?
I'm Sam, wife, mother, pro-life activist. I contract out with Live Action and try to help with their cause. And I'd say my main goal in life right now, as far as work goes, is to try to prevent as many abortions as possible and hopefully get it banned eventually, because it should never be legal to kill an innocent human, especially a child.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. I'm Katie. I am the president of Them Before Us. Samantha and Live Action and so many other amazing organizations are fighting children's right to life. Them Before Us fights for children's rights on this side of the womb, their right to be known and loved by their mother and father. So what that means is if it has to do with marriage and family, we're going to center the child in that conversation and insist that adults conform to children's rights instead of asking kids to sacrifice for them. There's certainly some intersection with what we're doing and the pro-life world, especially, you know, we don't get too much into the abortion space. We're definitely against the baby taking industry, but we're also highly critical of the baby making industry, big fertility that very, very often denies children not only their right to life, but their right to their mother and father. So we find fight shoulder to shoulder very often with pro-life advocates.
I'm Jess Holmes, better known on Twitter as Real Truth Cactus. My mission is to spread truth, to talk about real science as founded in creation and as founded in God, and just focus on these things, including the importance of fertility from a Christian perspective.
I'm Emily Zanotti. I'm a writer and a Catholic speaker. You probably know me best from Twitter. I'm the one who is always living this chaotic life. Fertility is actually one of the biggest things that I talk about, at least professionally, and primarily because I am a dedicated Catholic and I struggled with infertility for over 8 years. So we pursued an ethically and religiously, coherent approach to having children. And now I have a house full of chaos.
The cutest, most iconic chaos.
Oh,
hey, bud. How are you doing?
It's inevitable. If there's not children interrupting this, I'm sure there'll be a chicken loose somewhere in our house. It's just the way it is. It's how we live.
I love it.
I love it. Your children are such a joy, and I'm happy to be blessed with them. And I am Frida Donnelly, host of Finding the Faith, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, where we explore what matters. So let's get into it. Just so you know, everybody's amazing, wonderful things that they do is linked in the description below, so make sure that you check them out. So the first question, I think the very solid, you know, entry point into this discussion is, what is IVF?
I'm going to cede the ground to the Catholics.
So I guess I will give you that. IVF, or in vitro fertilization, is a method of reproductive assistance that takes gametes from both the male and female, man and woman. I know that I'm using really vague terms, but ultimately it takes sperm and eggs and makes embryos in a petri dish and then re-implants some of those embryos into a mother. And there's lots of other aspects to it, but at its core, it's using medications to stimulate production of more gametes and then using those to make children that are, many are implanted and most are not.
I think that's a really solid starting off point. Does anybody have anything else they want to add?
I'm glad she answered first. I was going to say child trafficking, but
I mean, but both are true, right?
Yes.
The commodification of the human body in order to fulfill a selfish need. Yeah.
Yeah. Low key eugenics as well.
Does somebody have like that? They're the same picture meme.
Right.
Should get a button for that.
But good answer. I mean, that explains it way better. So, good answer.
Hey, Maggie. Your kids are so cute.
More kids. More kids on the calls, please.
Yes.
Yes.
All the babies.
She's my favorite little icon. Oh.
The best way to describe her is iconic, because I don't... I can't compete.
When you're raised by an icon, I'm pretty sure, like, I don't have scientific proof of this, anecdotal evidence, but I'm pretty sure that that means that, like,
it's just her and Pikachu know? Just taking yeah. stage, man.
It's best on Mendeleev's genetics, right?
Right. I'm gonna pretend I know what that means. So we already, you know, kind of got into the what is the scientific process behind the IVF, but does anybody else want to add to that?
I mean, if you really want to know, I could go into it for like a long time. This was one of the things my husband and I talked about for a long time before we decided on the path that we did, just so we were fully informed and we knew what it was and we basically knew what we were saying no to. It is basically a 6-step process, right? So actually the first part that most people don't realize is the woman is going to take medication to suppress her natural menstrual cycle. These can include drugs like Lupron or Centrotide. These are all gonadotropin releasing hormones that suppress the pituitary gland's follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormones that are binding to the GRH receptor. So it's basically suppressing all of your hormones so the doctors can have a really tight control over when you ovulate. And then once they have that tight control, they can give you a whole nother drug to induce ovulation and wait until the follicles are a particular size to induce it and give you more hormones to take. So really they are just pumping your body full of tons and tons of drugs until it's time to actually go in and collect the eggs, which because there are children present, I am not going to describe the process in much detail, but just let's say it involves needles going in particular places. That does not sound like fun. And using a suction device, and it's like, ew. So there's that part. And then once they get that from you and they get the sperm from the husband, which they call a donor, which is like, talk about dehumanizing language.
Yeah.
But in any case, they basically put them in a petri dish that is filled with all of this liquid that keeps it at the appropriate pH and keeps it stable. So they can hopefully fertilize lots of embryos. And then the goal is to implant the best 1 to 2 embryos back into the woman when she is ready and also had been pumped through more hormones. So she is more receptive to that acceptance, and the idea is the embryos will implant. And then what happens after the rest of the embryos that were fertilized and not considered to be the best, I think is all of our primary concern here. The number one thing that happens is they are defrosted and discarded, aka child murder. There is what is referred to as compassionate transfer, which is when the eggs or the embryos are implanted at a non-ideal time in the hopes that the woman will have a miscarriage. And then I think the third option is they're just frozen indefinitely and souls remain forever on ice.
Yeah, in terms of what to do with those surplus embryos, the mm-hmm. American Society for Reproductive Medicine offers four options. One is you can continue to freeze them for future use. Mm-hmm. The second one is you can thaw and discard. Mm-hmm. The third one is you can donate to research. And the mm-hmm. ironic thing is you take these little lives and you donate them to scientists who will experiment on them until day 14 or maybe more, because we don't really know, because nobody's really keeping track of this. There's no general mechanism to ensure that you're not developing children farther than that. But 14 days has kind of been the acceptable amount of time amongst international scientists to experiment on young children, young humans. And most of the time, these treatments are done in the name of improving fertility treatments. So you're destroying little lives in the name of making better little lives in the future. And then, of course, they'll say, oh, you can also donate those children to another family, as if it's a purse or a car or something like that, another item that's unwanted that you want to donate to somebody else. So the horrible thing is that even before you get to the point of freezing those surplus embryos, you go mm-hmm. through a process of grading and screening and selecting those embryos. So let's say that you do extract 20 eggs, you fertilize them, 15 of them take, 7 of them didn't make the grade, you know, they're mm-hmm. subpar, so those are discarded right away. And then you can actually do genetic testing on these kids for things like eye color and hair color. And so you're literally designing a baby. That's really what you're doing, is you're designing a baby. And then let's say you've got 5 girls and 2 boys and you want to implant one of each. So then you put one boy in the freezer and the 3 other girls in the freezer. And the majority of the time, these kids don't ever leave the freezer. I mean, right now we've got about 1.5 million frozen embryos on ice in this country. According to some doctors, 20 to 40% have been functionally abandoned. So nobody's paying their storage fee. They cannot reach the doctor, the parents, the commissioning adults, who knows if they're really the mm-hmm. biological parents. And so what we have is really a huge humanitarian crisis on our hands. And this was kind of forced into the public consciousness when a month ago, the Alabama Supreme Court recognized that the wrongful death of a few of these frozen souls could actually be categorized as a wrongful death claim, as if these embryos were full human children, mm-hmm. because they are full human children. And it absolutely sent the fertility world into a panic, because, you know, you had clinics and hospitals in Alabama saying, we can't do business. We cannot do IVF here. If you're going to determine that these are humans from the moment of conception. And unfortunately, you had this ridiculous overcorrection on the part of Republicans who are like, wait a second, we need to protect IVF, without them saying, wait a second, why is it that if we define life as beginning at conception, IVF clinics are going to shutter in Alabama? Ask that question. And the answer is because designing, discarding, degrading, destroying little lives is foundational to the IVF business model and IVF processes. And ever since Dobbs was handed down, we have had fertility clinic doctors saying the quiet part out loud. They are saying, my ability to bring new life into this world is predicated on the fact that I am going to be able to select and grade and discard and, you know, in many cases, selectively reduce, that is, abort children that, you know, where too many take or they twin, you know, unexpectedly or whatever it is. Destroying little lives is foundational to
twin unexpectedly. It's hard to understate, like you said, business model. It is really hard to understate what this is as a business model. It really is a profit-seeking venture at the expense and dehumanization of women and children. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about the children side of this because these are abandoned lives, 1.5 million abandoned lives, at the mercy of this industry. And that is really what it is. So ultimately, my husband and I pursued what are considered licit treatments within the Catholic Church. So you cannot do IVF, you cannot do IUI, which is intrauterine insemination. That's you know, colloquially known as the turkey baster method, right? Mm-hmm. But what you can do is you can go to a NAPRO or a natural reproductive specialist. Mm-hmm. And they will monitor you every single day of your cycle. So you go in on the first day, you get a blood test and a transvaginal ultrasound. You go in on the third day, you do the same thing. You go in on the fifth day, and so on and so on. And then you do take those follicle stimulating hormones alongside that so that they can monitor the development of your eggs. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes time to release, they do give you the same trigger shot that they often give to women doing IVF. And the reason behind that is to make sure that every single egg that you've created is now going to be released and has an equal shot at being a baby.
And Emily, don't they also actually treat and diagnose and resolve underlying fertility issues? Like a lot of times the fertility doctors, they just skip right over. They're not looking at low sperm count or endometriosis. They just go, oh, struggling to get pregnant, IVF.
I went to an IVF doctor. I went to several doctors before, and all of them were like, oh, the answer is IVF. And I was like, no, actually something is wrong with my body. My body hurts. Mm-hmm. I was having these really intense pain. I would be on the floor missing works, just in excruciating pain.
And they'll have you believe that's normal, which makes me have you believe so that's angry. Normal.
The other thing they do is prescribe you birth control because you wouldn't want to miss out on that wonderful time of the month if you couldn't. Like, as if birth control is this amazing pan to all female problems, which is an extremely sexist approach, by the way, is to think like you have to suppress your fertility in order to control your health, which is insane. Mm-hmm. But NAPRO technology is centered in natural family planning, NFP, is all centered on figuring out what is actually wrong. So I had endometriosis, and ultimately I had an investigative surgery that showed that my ovaries were attached to each other. They separated them, and I got this one and his brother. and then 6 months later, we spent 8 years doing that. And then 6 months later, we thought we would never have more kids. And we were like, whoa, oops, we're pregnant again. And that's my daughter.
You know, I've also heard of a lot of
the underlying problem.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people, even when they do IVF, and then later they have an oops baby. And it always is weird to me. I don't know what it was a decent percentage, not the majority, but like a decent percentage where it's like, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know how long people on average wait before they start the IVF process. So maybe it is just a timing thing versus thing, but that's interesting.
About the fertility system. We don't know very much about the reproductive system. And a lot of this is because we really weren't allowed to talk about women's issues.
Well, apparently we're still not. I was going to say, don't.
And now we still don't. Birth control thing for the weekend. I'm writing a piece for the National Catholic Register about this. Like, we're not allowed to say that there are problems that birth control and IVF can't fix. And we've created this industry that goes straight from birth control to IVF, and we never talk about what's inside. The reality is that pregnancy and the pregnancy hormones and the stem cells that you get from a baby that's growing inside you can fix you. Yeah. And they can have this incredible impact on your body, and they can make changes to you. And that's apparently what happened to me. That's what happens to a lot of people is there's just, you get stem cells, you share stem cells. And suddenly you guys are just totally different people. And it's really cool because you have a part of your children inside of you, no matter how long they've been growing. It's not unusual at all.
Unfortunately, the other side of that coin is with IVF, they also use some of those stem cells in cosmetics. And that's why, real quickly, I wanted to tell you about our sponsor for this evening, Nimi Skincare. It does not do that. They're not woke. They're not, you know, pulling all sorts of gross stuff in your makeup, in your skincare. But they are. Is founded on faith, family, and freedom. It's paraben-free, and it's never tested on animals. All of these things matter so much to me, as does the fact that they source their ingredients from small American farms. Nimi Skincare loves America just as much as I do. And I know you'll love them too. That's why you should go to NimiSkincare.com and use code BASEDBABE to save 10% off today. And so that is, you know, the other side of the issue as well, because it is such a potent business structure. I did want to acknowledge that we got a Rumble rant. Katie Zed says, great convo. I wish I had known this all when we were trying to get pregnant. We do a thing on my channel where we can give the cat a treat when that is when we get a Rumble rant, but we are going to be saving those towards the end of the evening just for the flow and productivity.
If you do that, I'll go get Pikachu and I'll give him some worms.
Aww. Okay.
He made it into the thumbnail tonight as well. He's so cute. Em sent me a picture and then I felt so bad because, like, she sent it to me when I was on my way to Chick-fil-A. And I'm like, Kyle's like, you're eating its cousin. I'm like, you're so mean to me.
I will order food into my office. The brooder pen is in my office, so I eat chicken in front of chicken all the time. It's really awkward,
but you have to eat that. Oh. Yes, please do share all this info with everyone in the chat. So one of the questions that came in is, if IVF was done one embryo at a time and no child was killed in the IVF process, would that change our moral approach to it?
I'd say no, because I think it's not just the fact that children are purposefully killed, because they're also accidentally killed at extremely high rates. Only 7% of children will make it to being born. So the majority of them die. Now, I know a big part of that is purposeful death, but also a part of that is accidental death or unplanned death. And so it's just extremely risky. I mean, that's an understatement. It's not a safe procedure to put a child through. But in addition to that, even for the ones who are born, which God, thank God that they are here. Thank God that they made it through that process and that they're here, and we celebrate them and we love them and they have value and they're made in God's image. But on top of that, they still, especially with surrogacy, but they still end up losing a parent. They still are, it conflicts with child rights, no matter which way you do it, no matter which process. There's no ethical process to do IVF, because at the base of it, it conflicts with the basic human rights of a child and the natural rights that they have. So there's really no ethical way, unfortunately, to go about it.
And it's still a whole industry. So if one couple decides to do it one at a time, it's still financing that industry. That big business, that big fertility is still going to do whatever it's going to do with every other family that walks in the door. So it's just the continued support of their mission. Like,
and honestly, I wonder the percentage is 7% make it to birth right now. And if you did one at a time, I mean, that would plummet to I don't even know if, you know, maybe one out of a million. I don't even know what the percentage would be, because the reason why it's 7% right now is because they make so many in surplus in hopes that one or two or three will stick. And then, oops, if four sticks, let's kill two of them, you know, whatever it might be. So I don't even know. I've actually also spoken to quite a few. I mean, a handful of women who have been through IVF themselves, who attempted to do it the ethical way in their eyes, where, like you said, you kind of just do one embryo, two embryos, you implant only what you want and can handle. But somehow it still ends up turning, they still end up with more embryos than they planned, and now they're frozen. And so I ask, you know, a lot of them, how does that happen? And the main answer I get from these specific women, again, this isn't probably across the board, but from these specific women, is if we only did one or two, the chances of that coming through are like zero. And so either the clinic won't do it because it's not worth it to them, or that ruins their success rate. And that looks bad for them, or it's just too much on the women's body, because like you said, you're pumping yourself full of hormones, you're doing this long process, it's taxing on your body. And so to do it with the chance of, you know, being so minute that a baby will be born from this process, it's not even worth it to most people. So I think, I just don't think that could happen. I don't think we would ever get to a point of like only creating how many kids you can handle. Like, I think if we got rid of the idea of frozen embryos, the whole industry would fall. So,
yeah. And on top of it too, it would be so, so very costly.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I have spoken on this topic to hundreds and hundreds of people. I'm probably thousands at this point. This question always comes up because generally I'm speaking to audiences that are more conservative, more religious. And they're like, but isn't there a way for us to do this without violating the rights of children? And I'm like, okay, what that means is you only create the number of embryos you're prepared to immediately implant. So nothing is frozen. There's no screening, right? There's no grading. You put the embryo in regardless of whether or not it looks like you're going to have a severely disabled child. And then you do that every single time, you know, you do that $15,000 to $20,000 every single time you want to go through an implantation process. And the reality is it's cost prohibitive. Nobody's got that kind of money. I don't know why I'm getting a thumbs up.
I'm just going to give it a shot. And no egg donor, no sperm donor.
Right.
Like if you're honoring absolutely their natural rights, then it has to be
the
mom and the dad. Yeah. Yeah. And if they're having issues in the first place, then like usually it comes down to like, I need to borrow someone else's egg, someone else. And it's like, you mean someone else's child.
And you still have that commodification. So that's still, there's that still technology. You're asking science to stop itself for God. And we know notoriously they don't really like doing that. You're asking them to have some ethics about this and to say, you know, that. So, and you still have all of these processes, the babies are still created in a sterile environment. And if you get too many, there's still this thing called selective reduction, which occurs in a number of these instances where people get pregnant with four embryos implanted, they all take, and then suddenly they don't want quadruplets. So they abort 2 out of 4 or they abort 3 out of 4. So you still have this, an embryo split, and life is unpredictable. That's what the wonderful part of all of this is. And so life and birth and these things are so unpredictable that you still have all of these ethical questions that go along with just doing it one at a time. And then do you select? Do you say, I will continue to do this until I have a girl, or I will continue to do this until I have a boy? In which case you're participating in sort of the very industry that you say you're stepping back from.
And it always boils down to them still being property. You know, they're still bought and sold, and you're still buying your baby. And so it still is, you know, again, another ethical question. So even if you try to get the most moral approach to IVF, there's no way around all of these immoralities that come along with it inherently. And so there's no ethical process for it, unfortunately.
And the main thing is the families I know who have tried this. So like of all the hundreds and probably thousands of people I've talked to, I've met 6 couples that say, we did this.
Wow.
We never destroyed any embryos, 6. And 5 of them said, we fought our doctor. They did not want us to do it that way. We had to put our foot down over and over and over and over and over for what you just said, Samantha. Yeah. It actually tanks their success rate. They have to report, you know, they compete in terms of who's got the highest implantation rates, live birth rates, and all of that. And it is bad for them, for you to do it ethically. And so you're not going to get any support from big fertility. It is bad for them. If you are going to go into this with the perspective of, I'm going to defend children's right to life, you are working against your own doctors.
Yeah. And it also the eugenics of it, where it's like, you know, even if you want to implant every child, regardless of what test comes back, if they might have Down syndrome, if they might have a deformity, some parents do want to do that. And a lot of the clinics will fight them tooth and nail because that looks bad, where it's like, we have a certain percentage of children being born with Down syndrome. Do you want to come use our clinic? Like a lot of people are like, well, there's probably something wrong with the clinic, or it's like, or maybe there's something wrong with the process, you know, right now.
Yeah. When I walked out of the fertility clinic, we went to the IVF clinic first, and they just couldn't understand that I had any knowledge of my own body, that I had any knowledge of what had happened with my own body, that I had tracked anything. So they're taking advantage of women's ignorance, basically, about their own physical, their own body and their own physical processes and all the things that happen in their lives and their health. They were just shocked and couldn't understand why I was talking about ovulation and I was talking about progesterone and I was talking about all these things. But when I walked out, they were like, well, good luck. That's a terrible idea. And I was like, it's actually not a terrible idea. I'm not owed children by the universe. God doesn't owe me a kid just because I got married. I will end up in the right place at the right time with the right child or one that I might leave at the end of the driveway later.
She has fans in the chat, which I'm living for.
She has more fans than I do, just generally speaking, and she knows it. But at any rate, like, ultimately, you're not owed a cake, so you have to kind of approach it like, I got to save my soul too, and I've got to save these kids' souls, and I don't want to put children, living beings, through this kind of commodification process ultimately.
And that's not to say there aren't children who don't still need help out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there are thousands, possibly millions of children in the foster care system. If you incorporate all of the nations of the world, there are children who need a loving mother and father. You don't have to use science to genetically make you one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the big litmus test that we use at Them Before Us, is who's doing the hard thing here?
Yeah.
Who's doing the hard thing? If adults are doing hard things on behalf of children, you get a thumbs up. Where's my, there it is. Okay. but if you're forcing a child to do hard things for you, you get the thumbs down. I don't know if it's going to work, but that's the thing about adoption. It's adults doing hard things on behalf of children, and generally reproductive technologies is forcing children to do hard things on behalf of adults. So like, if in a just society, we are forcing the weak to sacrifice for the strong, that's just across the board an injustice. And so we found that's a really helpful litmus test when you're trying to think about how permissible it is to make a certain choice or a certain arrangement. You've got to ask yourself, is the kid doing hard things for me, or am I doing hard things for them? That's kind of going to give you the right answer in every situation.
That's such a solid question. And kind of circling back a little bit to the, you know, fighting with the doctors aspect of things, even just when I was getting off birth control this past year, I was like, oh, you know, talking to the medical staff, I was like, so do I come back here, you know, when I'm ready, when it's time? And they're like, no, we don't do that here. If you want to end that, we can help you. But other than that, you should go see someone else. And I remember, like, you know, like that really ugly, like super minimalistic art, being in a building like downtown that I didn't want to be in, because I was like, okay, it's way too like hashtag girl boss in here. It was like so uncomfortable. And I'm like, okay, because it was just like the first opening. Because I was, you know, with a lot of the birth control talk, with the work that you do, Emily, and, you know, the work that, you know, some of our other people do, it's, yeah. And even in that moment, I could barely take it. So I cannot imagine, you know, going through and fighting with your doctors at every step of the way when you're dealing with far more hormones than I was because of everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm already crazy without them. So if you add those on top of it, I was very lucky. I had a saint. My doctor has since passed away, which is really sad, because I feel like he could have, you know, hopefully he's trained many more that will go out into the world, and he's watching over all of us. But he was very understanding and wonderful, and went from the beginning to the end all the way through. And his office didn't prescribe birth control unless you really made them. They couldn't legally in Illinois. They couldn't just tell you no, but they didn't end pregnancies. They didn't do any of that. So it's really blessing to find somebody who does stuff like that in a practice that isn't, you know, this last time around, I had to deal with Vanderbilt Hospital, which is a lovely place and they saved my life. But, you know, you're dealing with a very, you know, I had remains. I had an ectopic pregnancy that ruptured. And Vanderbilt was just very much like, well, do you want them buried in the ground? Do you want them sent to our research lab? I would just really like them back, please. So even in a situation like that, you deal with sort of this cold nature. And I get it. They deal with a lot of terrible things all day long. But women's health is, there's a real opening for someone who wants to start practices that are pro-life, that are female affirming, that are looking for answers, rather than, like I said, this sort of birth control to IVF pipeline that exists in our women's health industry.
Even when I was pregnant, I thought that I would escape the whole like big pro-abortion just industry with the, you know, all because I hired midwives and I was going to do a home birth. And I was so excited because I was like, oh, they have to be pro-life, right? Because they're not in the big hospitals. And it's like, nope. I still remember, like, I signed up, we went to their first appointment. It was great. Everything, they were wonderful people. I leave. And then I just had this like little itch of like, I'm curious. And so I look one of them up on Facebook and then I start going through all of their Facebooks and all of them are just like all, you know, a ton of pro-abortion posts and like, make sure it's legal, do this. And me and my husband talked about it for weeks and I was like, I don't, you know, should we stay? Should we go? Mm-hmm. You know, but I really wanted that home birth. And so I was like kind of torn and I was like, and the hospital, of course it's going to be all pro-abortion. Like, you know, people, they probably would feel the same way as the midwives. And so am I really going to be able to escape it? And so we came down to if there was any hiccup, if there was anything where like our child might have an issue or something like that, we would, you know, switch to somebody who's actively pro-life. So that way somebody who's fighting for our child, even if there's an issue. But if everything just kind of goes smooth, we'll go through with it. And then next time, do a little bit more research before we select a provider. And again, they were wonderful people in general, but like, that's obviously something that's very important to me because I want to know if anything goes wrong, I don't want somebody who's going to be on the bedside saying like, so we have these options. And it's like, I know the options. I don't want the options.
There's a lot of pressure to do things like, like genetic testing. Like, oh, we should test you, because I had to be transferred to maternal fetal medicine because I'm geriatric. Mm-hmm. That was exciting. with Maggie, I was geriatric at the time, so which is lovely. And they were like, well, you know, do you want this genetic testing? You're an older individual. Your chances for Down syndrome are high. And I was like, the only reason I would want to know that is so that I could be prepared for when that baby is born. And they were like, it's because, like, whatever happens here is the result of
you too. Yeah,
bigger plan than me. And I'm not, you know, I'm very much a hospital birth person and they still got after me because I was still like, I would not do that. Actually, would love to have a lovely child because they are my child.
Sure. Now, due to the marketing around IVF being potentially a woman's last hope of conception, what would you say to women who are looking to become mothers?
I mean, I would say one of the first and foremost important things about motherhood and parenthood in general is putting your child first. And you have to think about that before you even have kids. And so when you think about this process and you think about kind of the dangerous procedures and process that they would have to endure and the chances of them even surviving that. And if it's avoidable, you should be doing, you know, avoid it for that child's sake ahead of time. So it's one of those things where it's a hard conversation. You know, as a mom, you can completely relate to that need and that feeling of, I just want a child and I just want to love, you know, a little version of me and my husband. But you can't put that desire ahead of what the child's going to experience and go through and their well-being and their inherent rights. And so that has to be first and foremost.
Yeah, that's it. It's just, you know, part of being an adult is doing hard things. Certainly part of being a Christian adult is doing sacrificial things on behalf of others. And so going into this with the mentality of they're going to sacrifice for me, some child is going to lose their right to life or their right to their mother or father, or be brought into life through a process that is dehumanizing, or I'm participating in an industry. Maybe I'm not separating children from their mother or father or killing them, but this industry is on a mass scale. So you've really got to think about, you know, who's doing the hard thing here? If it's you and you're going to resolve your longing to be a mother, somehow it has to be in a way where no kid is sacrificing for you, where you're sacrificing for them.
Absolutely. You have to think about the reason behind why you want to be a mother. it's a hard thing to think about, because you get on social media and you see pregnancy announcements and whatever, and you feel really bad inside if you and your husband have been trying to conceive for a long time. I get that it's hard, but do you want to do it because you want the Instagram post, you want that moment, or do you want it because you want to be involved in the life of a child? If it's the latter, then there are other ways to do that that are infinitely more ethical. You don't have to just conceive naturally. I mean, you can, like we talked about earlier, you can adopt, you can foster. If you don't do those things, you can volunteer at your local church. There are other ways to be involved in the lives of children besides motherhood. If that's your maternity
as a woman, you have all these things. Like, we love to say now, right, that there's no gender binary, there's nothing that makes a woman and a man, but you as a woman, your maternal instincts, they're valuable in all sorts of things. Whether you are a mother naturally, and it still hurts me to see pregnancy announcements. You know that? My children are 5 years old and it still hurts. It's still so I still remember that feeling. And you can be a mother in your church. You can be a mother in your community. You can be a mother in a job. I know that that is, you know, a third rail sometimes, but you could be a mother in a workplace. You can be a mother in your home. You could be a mother to your cats, a mother to your chickens, a mother to your homestead, a mother to your fan base. And motherhood looks so different for everybody. It's not what you expect when you get into it anyway.
That's true. And I kind of want to take this moment to thank Jess for being such a wonderful mom friend to me. And I also want to give you a moment to have the floor to share with those who may not have heard yet about.
Oh, so since we've been talking about all different types of ways to be a mom, if you've never heard my story before, my husband and I had been trying to conceive for a long time. We've been married almost 10 years. We had a miscarriage a couple of years ago, which was the only time we had gotten pregnant. And we prayed for a long time and ultimately felt God leading us to adopt. And adoption is a very long and difficult process. We did the home study. We did all the training, all of that. And when we got to January, they were like, okay, it could be 1 year, it could be 5 years, it could be a long time before you're ever matched with a child to adopt. And it could be any range of possibilities. And we really took our time in it because I had to go on a mission trip. We weren't applying to cases. When I got back, I applied to a few. 2 days later, we were matched with a mom who, rather than aborting her child, decided to put that child up for adoption. And so we are very excited to be welcoming a child into our home in August.
That is so happy. Ooh, exciting.
And if you would like to support Jess on this amazing journey of her family welcoming this special, precious little one, please, please visit the link in the description where her merch drive and her GiveSendGo are both linked so that we can support the amazing Holmes family in this new chapter of their wonderful, lovely life.
I appreciate it. And I do just want to like point out one thing, because the situation women end up in which they put their children up for adoption, it's not a small thing. I can't imagine what life circumstances bring a woman to that point. I know it ranges across the board. But my heart is so encouraged by the women who do that rather than choosing abortion, who love their children enough to give them a chance at life, to give them a chance at having a mother and father. I mean, whether that child is going to be born, whether that child is 5 years old, doesn't matter. As long as they are choosing what is best for their child, that is the most motherly act a woman could do, right? Even if that isn't always them in that moment. And I know that is such a hard thing. And so many, many prayers and accolades to the women who are out there doing that.
You know, acknowledging that just shows that you're the exact type of person that should be adopting. You do see a lot of people who, you know, will adopt where it's like the key focus is themselves. And it's just like, well, I want a baby, so I'll get a baby. And they don't really consider the fact that like there's a whole other side of it that is mm-hmm. traumatic and difficult. And, you know, the beauty of adoption, which is so important and beautiful and wonderful, also has a flip side. And so yeah. like, we're not saying that shouldn't be the focus, that, you know, we should be focusing on the good side of it. But it's good to acknowledge the other side where it's like, we will be praying Absolutely. For that mom. And we'll be praying for your child, and we'll be praying for your whole family as you guys prepare. But gosh, people like you, that they're the type of people that industry needs, because you're the ones who are like you said, it's about doing it for the child, not doing it just because you want it. You know, it's yeah. about, there's a baby out there who will need a home, and we would love to take care of that baby, you know?
Right. I think of it as the union of two families, where one family can't necessarily stand on its own, two in a community make a better whole.
That's yeah. 100%. That's yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. I think that it's going to be a really good thing. And boy, you are going to love that child. I'm so excited for you. Babies are the best. Children are the best. They just change your whole life, and all in the best ways. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you guys so much.
So exciting. Pretty soon somebody will be half naked in your house.
And it's not my husband. I mean, it's not Marshmallow. Yay, chaos. I love it.
See, Jess, we're all celebrating you.
Yay.
Oh. So when do we justify the use of medicinal practices to overcome fertility?
So my thoughts are, as someone who did choose a sort of medicinal practice,
mm-hmm.
My biggest advice is know your body. All women. If you are young, if you're old, do not settle for the Planned Parenthood sponsored sex education you get in school.
No.
Go and educate yourself. Find a natural fertility or natural family planning practitioner, and learn what your body does and what it is, because infertility.
Yes. And that is exactly how you'll feel after you learn all that stuff.
Yes, really, you'll feel really good about yourself. also,
can I say that this is the best podcast that celebrates women, that it has like the whole family life going on. This is a true celebration of women.
Leaning in, right? That's what they call it, leaning in, right?
Yeah,
find out about your body, because as many of us know, infertility isn't something that just strikes with age. It definitely will strike you with age. You will hit a wall. However, you can have struggles with infertility, solvable, unsolvable, mysterious, clear at any age. And you can have kids and still have infertility. You can have all sorts of things happen to you. So it's worth knowing what happens and understanding and knowing that exists.
I'm going to tell something too.
Yeah? You're going to tell something too? What are you going to tell?
I love you, Mom.
Oh, thank you.
I'm gonna cry. That's so cute.
He really just wants the Lucky Charms marshmallows that aren't in the cereal. That's
how it actually. You know, you do what you gotta do.
And I gotta do what I gotta do to earn it, right?
Apparently, the chat's been going off. They're been demanding the cat. Thank you so much, Katie, for the rumble rant. Let me make sure that the crunch is acceptable.
Oh man. Is this an ASMR?
Yeah, cat ASMR.
Chat literally gets cranky if he doesn't crunch loud enough. I have to give him pep talks after the show.
Gotta crunch louder next time, Jazzy.
Oh. Oh. So where were we? Sorry, Kyle just handed me the cat.
No, it's so funny because like even just preparing for the podcast and thinking a lot and reading a lot about the IVF and the surrogacy, it's like, oh my gosh, we could do like 100 podcasts on this and still literally not scratch the surface. So I think the last thing you asked was just like when is it okay to use medicinal options there? So yeah, I would say, and exactly what she said, know your body. And I would say it's, you know, ethical as long as it doesn't conflict with the natural rights of the child. So in any situation where there might be a conflict, then I would say don't do it. In any situation where, you know, the child's put first and it's healthy for your body, I'd say give it a shot. So
one thing to think about too is certain doctors will try to use birth control to try and get you regulated. That's their excuse, right? To get you regulated.
Yeah, I have a family member who had to deal with that because of her endometriosis.
Ah, she brought Pikachu!
He was advertised, or she was advertised. She's a lady. She was advertised. I just misgendered the chicken.
He really likes worms.
Yeah. But she was advertised as being on the podcast, so we had to bring
her on. Wow. I was such a queen for this.
She's so happy just sitting there. All the kids. I love this so much.
This is amazing.
She's getting a handful of freeze-dried mealworms right now, so she is very happy.
Emily, if you don't have a podcast, you need to start one because I'd watch this all the time.
We should just do like a live cast, right? Like just me and my kids interrupting my day.
There you go.
She has a killer Substack though with amazing recipes, and they're always like hilariously named too, which I'm low-key obsessed with. You'll allow me to fangirl for a moment. So that's also linked to the description below. How did you get up there?
Wow. I love how this is just like devolved into mad chaos.
Into like a barnyard.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Answered Seder with the $10 rumble rant. What kind of dog is Pikachu?
Can you get off my screen, please? I'm so sorry. I'll just talk
about Pikachu is a golden retriever. I was going to get it.
You can tell. Look at the color. Golden.
Jazz, what question did you write? It says, Alibaba. But instead of going to that question, I think we're going to go to, are there physical, secular, or ethical concerns around Clomide for ovulation?
Oh, Clomid. That's one Clomid. Of the okay. drugs. Mm.
There are no, from the Catholic Church's perspective, which is one of the most restrictive, there are no concerns with Clomid. All it does is help you to ovulate more regularly or heavier. The one big concern, though, is that it doesn't really work. It is it's diminishing returns, and it's another one of those things that they will give you. To just sort of satisfy you, you say, I am infertile and I don't want to do IVF, so they'll give you Clomid. Clomid has diminishing returns over the 6 months you can take. Oh my God. The 6 months you can take it. But there are no qualms. There's lots of Clomid babies. Sometimes it just helps you kind of regulate your cycle, but there are really ethical concerns over
it. Yeah, I took Clomid for the 6 months, and that was. At the very end of the 6 months, we had gotten pregnant and then lost it. But it did help regulate my cycles. But in the end, I couldn't be put back on it. Wasn't as useful as it could have been.
Okay. Because I have a family member who had a Clomid baby. Mm. I'm trying not to say exactly how she's related to me because I don't want to, you know, give away that. But she had asked me about that when she had found out I was doing this panel. So
I love how you called her a Clomid baby. She had a Clomid baby.
My kids are Follistim kids, which is like the same as Clomid. It's like the more intense Clomid. I don't feel bad. Stop that. Pikachu is all natural.
Oh, are there emotional implications for women and couples undergoing IVF or surrogacy?
Oh, where do I get started?
Yeah, book
itself. Right?
Yeah, I know this is just like loaded questions.
Spiritual, mental, emotional, physical—you name it. There's a ramification for it. Spiritually, lots of people love to tell you the babies are blessings. Why aren't I blessed with one? What did I do wrong? Emotionally, it is just hard. You think as a woman, you know, you can get away from it all you want. We've talked a lot about feminism and things and what women are supposed to do and what they do now. But ultimately at your core, you just want to have a baby. Like you are hardwired. Ow. That is your evolutionary
job. My name is Pikachu.
Yeah, your name is not Pikachu. So when that doesn't happen, it is devastating.
Yeah.
That's why you end up with chickens, because you think you just need more children.
I right. do love your shirt. That's an awesome shirt. Does that go in my size? Can I borrow that? That's really cute. I like
it. Yeah.
No.
No. Okay.
There was a point at which we had four cats in the house, because you're right. There's women just have this need to be nurturing. I mean, it's written in our genetic code. There's no way to escape it. And you want to know the interesting thing, the women who think they are escaping it, ask them if they're on birth control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm actually working on a piece right now about birth control and about the whole WashPo scandal, because goodness gracious. But there are so many side effects, and doctors just don't want to listen to women.
Because it's not about what the women want. It's about this humanist movement. I think Emily said it earlier, this birth control to IVF pipeline. It's about doctors having creation power. It's not about God having creative power. It's about humans playing the role of God. When you have a child, what that child looks like, what genetic disposition that child has, rather than letting God design it, humans are trying to take the creative power away.
It's also viewing fertility as a curse and a disease. Pregnancy is a disease. Pikachu. What happens to women, and this is completely... Pikachu is not going to sit. It doesn't matter how many times you tell her to sit.
Pikachu. I thought she was a golden retriever chicken.
Pikachu. No. Ow! No.
You okay?
Anyway, there's this need to treat women's fertility as a disease. And we are constantly trying to get rid of it, control it, do whatever we can. And yet here we are. Still, we don't know anything about it. And still, we don't have any idea of what it takes to overcome it. We've given women nothing other than a birth control pill that just sends some people like me just over the top. Like, depressed, awful apathy. It changes your whole body and your whole life. And we don't know the long-term ramifications, because it's just the first generation sort of reaching geriatric age with birth control. And it's scary. It's like women are just experimented on.
Yes. And of course they're coming after, you know, anybody who says anything bad about birth control, because it's a whole industry of itself. But the ties that it has to the abortion industry are just like, I mean, they just go hand in hand, and like the money that they make off of that. Like, again, you have Planned Parenthood. They're fully in the birth control industry in the sense that like they're handing it out. I don't know if you've heard Abby Johnson talk about this specifically, where the main birth control that they offer to women is the one that you have to take on time every single day, because they know that the rate of women who don't take it every day consistently is pretty high, which means they're going to have a customer in a few months, because women think that they're doing fine and they're going to take it, but then they forget, but then they still go on and do what they do. And
I had my first scare.
Yes. And then even with the IVF industry, it's like, who's going to take care of these babies when there's accidentally four that make it in the womb and they need to go ahead and get it down to two or three? Well, go ahead and call Planned Parenthood. They're there for you. They'll take care of that. So, you know, it's all tied together. And it's just, it really is the root of evil, which is money. It's like, it really comes down to that. They profit so much off of lying to women and keeping this information from them. I bet that we know so much about fertility. I bet there are people who know so much about it, but will we ever hear from them?
No. Nope.
It's all in media. Media is in Planned Parenthood's hand. Like, again, it's all tied.
And think about how they control you from Girl Scouts.
Yep. Yes.
Planned Parenthood is involved with Girl Scouts. Oh. They do the curriculum for your sex education.
Yep.
They're the ones who pass out the condoms on your college campus. They're the ones who give you the healthcare when you can't afford it. They're always there for some reason, but when it comes to what they make money on, it's not you having babies. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's you having babies, but not actually going through with it. You creating the babies just so you can.
Creating the babies, just not creating the baby.
It's horrible. It really is. I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm laughing about it, but it's not funny.
It's one of those. If I don't laugh, I'll cry.
All the things that I know, it's like, oh my goodness, it goes so deep, and our society has to start speaking out. And I think, you know, in different ways we are, again, birth control. I've seen a lot of posts, even years ago at this point, where they would take out open up the box of birth control and take out those, like, the papers, and it has like the ridiculous, you unfold it and it's like this big and this long, and it's all of the possible horrible things that can happen to your body if you're on birth control. Mm-hmm. And someone's like, you know, taking a picture of it and saying, you know, this is crazy. Why are we putting this in our bodies? And it's funny that we all on the same page about like the dangers of birth control. They even admit it themselves on half their websites. And now all of a sudden they're like, no, there's nothing wrong with birth control. There's something wrong if you're not on birth control. It's so healthy. It's so good for you. And I also think a big push is coming because it's an election year. So I'm pretty sure a big part of that is going to be like the whole pro-abortion, pro-birth control. If anyone says anything otherwise, they're evil. Don't vote for them. So I think that's all part of it. But
I would love to see someone do a statistics trend on the number of women who took birth control in their early teen years and how it's affected their fertility over time. Because I know basically every girl I know who is struggling with infertility, like myself, was put on birth control when they were 14. I know they put me on it to help regulate my cycles because I have PCOS. That was the claim, right? That it's supposed to help you. And back then, mothers trusted their doctors. We thought we could trust our doctors. That is a whole nother thing to talk about, is whether or not you can trust that, not just for fertility, but for everything.
Absolutely.
I would love to see the Venn diagram. People who like are freaked out about seed oils and people who are on birth control. Like, okay. I would love to see that Venn diagram, right?
Yes.
Natural living. And
it also reminds me of a lot of the people who are like the antidepressant pills are also ones who drink a lot. And it's funny because if you drink a lot, that like suppresses the antidepressant pill. So it doesn't, it helps it not work. So it's like, you're just really messing with your body there if you do both. Yeah. So like, you have to really understand what you're
people
putting in
your body.
People
aren't thinking about their body chemistry very hard.
Yeah.
And alcohol is also a depressant too.
Yeah. And I just feel so lucky that I missed the because I actually have PCOS, and I've had that since high school when I was I think 15. I actually had a cyst burst, which is what I figured out. I had it happen twice, and I am so lucky. I mean, the chances are like so slim, but no doctor, unless maybe my mom just said no, I don't know, either that my mom just said no, we're not going to do birth control, or the doctor didn't suggest it. But I hear that from so many women who have PCOS, which is like, oh, I have to be on birth control, I have to, because I have PCOS. And it's like, just because you have PCOS doesn't mean you inherently have to. I just think doctors are, again, oh, you have PCOS, birth control. I just think they just, it's, you know, so people
you
don't
breathe
question
in and out
it.
birth control.
Birth control.
I've had cyst bursts. I didn't go on birth control, and I went on it when I was an adult for like, I think I was on it for like a month and a half, and it was so detrimental to my health that I was like, nope, never again. I don't care. I'm mentally prepared. If I have a baby, I will just, you know, make it work. And so luckily that was the only time. But I was able to conceive, and it wasn't this thing. So I'm not saying every woman who has PCOS is exactly like me. I'm sure there's like a big variety of severity and things like that. Everybody's different, but just the inherent jump to, oh, I have this, so I need birth control. That's not true inherently. So work, you know, find a good doctor, work with that doctor, and, you know, see if you can try to avoid birth control if possible, because that could just introduce a whole, I always say birth control is just a band-aid, because even people who it's like, oh, my flows are so painful and heavy. And it's like, okay, but why? Because birth control doesn't address why, because that's not normal. That's not natural. So something's off, something needs to be addressed. And instead of addressing that issue, you're putting a band-aid on it. So it doesn't, it's like taking Tylenol, where it's like, Right. It's not fixing the problem. It's just fixing the pain. And exactly. So just because it's like, you know, and it's introducing a whole new level of things that could go wrong with your body and making it worse. But thank goodness it doesn't hurt in the moment. You know, it's like you've got to think long term, you know.
Endometriosis. There is only now a drug coming out for endometriosis. And it's only in the last maybe 20 years that anybody's really cared. What? Oh, you're kidding. that people have really cared. And it's ridiculous because they, people were just like, oh, we're just going to prescribe birth control. And then suddenly my generation is like, well, we've been in birth control for 30 years and now we want to have kids. Mm-hmm. We have endometriosis. What do we do? And there was faulty logic. The logic was that because pregnancy has a stopping effect on endometriosis growth, that somehow birth control would have that same stopping effect. And it doesn't. We now know it doesn't. But it took them 20 years to figure that out. And how many people were injured in the process of that?
That's not on them. It's on you. And so that's the thing. It's so important for women, like you said, Emily. It's like you've got to know your body, because all these people who are giving you this advice, these doctors who say that they know what they're talking about, there has not been long-term tests on a lot of this stuff. And they're not going to come back and fix you later. You know, they're done. They're gone. Like they don't care. They don't think about your future.
They got what they wanted from you.
But yeah, they took their paycheck and they went home and called it a day. And so I don't know if you've also seen this recently, but I feel like there has been this, you guys might even know the name of it, but this new acne treatment. And they make women, if you want this acne treatment, they make women go on two forms of birth control because the acne treatment is so severe that if you do get pregnant, it will most likely, you know, make you have a miscarriage. And so they're trying to prevent miscarriage, but they make you go on two forms of birth control. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how, you know, you're trying to treat acne and then you're putting them on these hormonal birth controls. And it's like, how does not, like, I feel like your body must be going insane. And
here's a secret about dermatology, because I'm a skincare obsessive. Birth control screws up your skin.
Yes.
You cannot get it back. Like, you will get it screwed up and you cannot get it back. You will be 40 years old and, like me, going to rosacea doctor and trying to correct, you know, 30 years of hiding all of this stuff. It just doesn't work.
Yep. So again, it's such a big industry. It's so hard to tackle, but I just think that that's why I was excited to come on today, because it's so many things that just never, I guess it does get talked about. It's just not common. And again, when it is, they suppress it. So you just don't get to hear about it much.
Exactly. That's why we're streaming to YouTube and Rumble right now, with Rumble being like the number one first one, because YouTube doesn't always like my stuff. Circling back and then moving forward, so what's the impact of marriages? I know we kind of talked about this in our group chat that we created for this event, but what is the impact on marriages because of the loss of intimacy during the creation of a child?
Oh boy, the forced timing of intercourse really takes the spice out of things. I know it was really frustrating when we were trying to conceive, and it takes the fun out of it, right? Because now it feels like a chore instead of something you do to show love to your spouse.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that is so well said. I know that we still have some questions left, but I feel like we covered so much that we should probably do a part two of this together when we can mesh all of our schedules together.
I'm ready to go, man.
Okay. Yeah, and you guys are, I mean, people are always welcome. I've been through the ringer, so people are always welcome to contact me or talk to me about it. And if you don't feel comfortable advocating, like I said earlier, I'm a big jerk, and I'm a jerk in real life too. So I am happy to go and to your doctor with you and yell at them if you need it.
The mom you're you've amazing. Always needed.
The mom you've always needed.
Right. You can be Twitter mom.
Mama Bear.
I'm Twitter mom. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. I want
to
be one.
And the chicken pooped on my back, so I'm going to have to go now.
You're like, walk this way.
Don't look at that.
Nobody look! Oh, thank you all so much for being here. Is there anything y'all would like to say in closing, kind of round robin style?
last thing I was going to say, it's a little bit off topic. Congratulations, Jess. I'm just so excited for you. This is actually the first time I've really talked to you, but I'm just, you know, again, children are such a gift, such a blessing, and people like you who step in and really try to find them a home that's extremely necessary and important. It's really beautiful, and I hope people support her, because like you said, a link down below, adoption, it's expensive. It's so expensive. Yeah. We all know it's expensive. But even on top of adoption, there's also additional expenses, just, you know, all the fun stuff, the diapers and the, you know, cribs and things like that. So I think everyone should take a look at that link. But if anyone else wants to talk about abortion, I am always open. Even if you vehemently disagree with me and hate me, I will still talk with you. as long as you're not too mean, then I'll probably block you. But if you're willing to have an open discussion, my DMs are always open. It's a topic that I'm very passionate about, and I do my best to use non-biased sources and show you some facts about it. So,
another thing that I particularly love about you, Sam, is that because of the fact that we don't talk about a lot of the stuff so often, sometimes we kind of feel like we should already know the answers. And so there have been times where I've DM'd you and I'm like, what is the answer? This math doesn't math. I don't know. And I feel like I should know. And you have been nothing but gracious and an absolute delight. So thank you so much for that. And also thank you for being here.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. That's sweet.
Oh, it's my turn to talk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah, I...
Trust the process, so cute.
Right? Like, trust in God, and he'll bring you to what you need to be a mom to, whether it's somebody like this guy or something else. It's amazing what happens when you just let go.
Amen. Let go and let God. I mean, that truly is the thing. And if you're listening and you're struggling with this decision, you're struggling, like, you really want to do IVF, but you know something in your heart is telling you not to do it. You really want to become a mom, but you just don't know what God is trying to tell you and where God's trying to lead you. Let us pray for you. Send us a DM. My DMs are always open. I would love to talk to anyone who is going through this struggle, because I've been there. I'm still there, you know. We all have different crosses to carry, and don't feel like you have to do it alone. So if you ever need someone to talk to, Real Truth Cactus on Twitter, send me a message.
All of their Twitters are linked down below, and I've had the amazing privilege of having all of these women share their faith journeys as well. And they're also linked down below, along with what they're up to. So make sure that you give these incredible women who, like, I get to be blessed to be called friends. Like, what? What is my life? make sure you check out their work and support them in what they're doing, and follow them on Twitter if you're on the Twitterverse, because I know they have been such a light for me personally and have helped me grow so much. Jess, would you feel comfortable offering a closing prayer?
Sure. Dear God, thank you so much for this day. Lord, thank you so much for these women, for Frida, and for this opportunity to speak truth into this horrific practice that is IVF. God, I pray that you would be with the listeners this evening. To anyone who listens it later, I pray that your word would reach down into their hearts. I pray that the truth would reach them, and I pray that they would have the spirit and the strength to go forward, knowing that you love them, but knowing the truth. I pray that you would all give us and strengthen us in our mission to fight for the unborn, to fight for life, and to fight for the rights of children, who I know are precious to you, God. I pray that you would guide us throughout the week, and that we would do all things to glorify you. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Yay. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly do me a favor and leave me a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. My podcast is available wherever you can listen, and it's also available live on Rumble on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern. I hope you can join us in whatever format works best for you. Please tell somebody that you care about this episode so that I can spread my work and encourage more people. And remember, stay based and stay blessed.